Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 9. And the Steelers are getting ready for exhibition game number 2 against the Atlanta Falcons. First game at Heinz Field this year. 4 o'clock kickoff on Sunday, Dave. And Mike Tomlin just finished talking. No Ben, no AB, same as last week. Let me ask you. We're going to get some Ben and AB next week, and we're not going to get any Ben and AB against Carolina. Do Ben and AB get a quarter? Does AB get to touch the ball in the preseason? And again, you know, if you want to look at the Le'Veon Bell situation, it just kind of – Le'Veon Bell's not there. Obviously, he's not getting the reps in practice that Ben and AB are getting. But, you know, you talk about being in football shape. Ben's not getting hit being in football shape. Is it any different for Le'Veon Bell?
First of all, we have some breaking news that we need to go over from yesterday, courtesy of Adam Schefter. Le'Veon Bell is expected to report before the start of the regular season. If I broke some news like that, I'd be the laughing.
You'd be deblogged.
Yeah, I think my own mother would throw me out of her basement at that point. You know, you're forced to write about something like that, you know, but you also have to tongue in cheek,
right?
Okay, you have to add some sarcasm along in that post, which I pretty much did. I think I wrote well. That certainly adds some clarity to, you know, for us there. Was there anybody who really is doubting that he wouldn't show up for that first regular season game? You know, he stands to lose, you know, a little over $700,000 for each game, you know, that he misses. We all expected a report. The big news is that there's no news as to when he's actually going to report. Is it going to be immediately after the second preseason game? Is it going to be after the preseason finale? Or is it going to be somewhere in between? And nobody really knows. And you know, as you know, Ben was on the radio, you know, this past week talking about, you know, you can't simulate football shape. No matter how on your own, no matter how hard you try. And he talked about, you know, he downplayed it a little bit more than Colbert and Tomlin did about his, you know, him being away. But he did say, you know, on top of it about the conditioning that, you know, the playbook's a little bit larger and yada, yada. You know, back to your original questions there. I would have liked to seen Ben and AB play a series or two along with Martavis in this second preseason game, even if it only included maybe 2 passes and, you know, 4 or 5 handoffs. I would have liked to seen it. I can understand why Tomlin probably doesn't want to quote unquote risk it, but you know, he should have all 5 or at least 4 of his starting offensive linemen there. Tomlin really didn't say whether or not Marquise Pouncey will play, and I would be highly surprised if Pouncey did play against the Falcons. And maybe that's reason alone, not having your center in there to sit a guy like Roethlisberger. But, you know, I suppose, you know, the third preseason game is always the annual quote-unquote tune-up game. I would think that you would see, you know, anybody who's a starter that's healthy enough to play at least a half in that game. And then, you know, we'll see what happens in the finale. I think everybody expects, you know, everybody to sit, especially with you still having a 90-man roster at that point. So, you know, we'll see. What we do know is Ben's not playing this week. AB's not playing this week. Landry's probably not playing this week, even though he's perking up from that abdominal strain. And Joshua Dobbs will make his second straight start.
Right. So we're going to get the same look we got last week and probably relatively close to the same type of playing time in terms of what guys get. Does the quality of the opponents make any difference here? I mean, you're looking at two teams in the exhibition season. The Falcons were in the Super Bowl. The Giants, you know, were a decent team. I mean, does it mean anything, or is it the same drill? They're doing the same thing, so, you know, neither you nor I, maybe neither the Giants nor the Falcons know the quality of their second and third team. So is there anything more meaningful about this game because it's the Falcons?
No, you know, obviously you would as a, I guess, analyst and or fan or both, you would kind of like to see Julio go against, you know, either Artie or,
yeah, sure,
or Ross Cockrell or, you know, TJ Watt to have to go against a first team tackle or, you know, individual matchups, I think. Not so much scheme and what's happening, just more one-on-one. I think anybody, you know, regardless of what level of a viewer, classification of viewer that you are, would probably like that. That will probably be the primary thing that I'll be focused on. But I think Tomlin said it best a little while ago, is, you know, we have no control who they're going to play. He says he even doubts Julio Jones will play in that game. I mean, we'll see. We know Devontae Freeman's supposed to be held out. So, you know, there goes their starting running back. And, yeah, you know, does it make it any more meaningful? Well, I mean, are preseason games meaningful in general? I tend to think so. You know, I mean, there are a lot of players still battling, although not a long list, there's still players battling for roster spots and players trying to impress other teams at the same time. So there is a level of interest to it, but as far as the quality of opponent goes and digging inside the matchup, yeah, not so much.
Yeah. Okay, so, you know, we've talked about a bunch of guys. We haven't talked about Cody Sensabaugh. We haven't talked about Tyler Matakevich. We've talked a little bit about, you know, we've obviously talked a lot about all the skilled position guys. On offense, you mentioned Filers last week. And, you know, I mentioned as we go before we got into preseason that Mihalik is the guy that the Steelers obviously waived last year. He didn't get through waivers during the season. The Lions picked him up, put him on their practice squad, put him on their roster. When they moved him around, the Steelers picked him back up. What are you hearing about him when we talk about kind of the guys who might make it to the practice squad or, you know, ninth offensive lineman, which we both think is highly unlikely? Is Mihalik still that guy?
You know, you would think if they keep eight offensive linemen in total on their 53, which it's easy to pick out, I think, who those eight are already. You would think they're going to keep a guard and a tackle on the practice squad. You know, keep you know, two offensive linemen on the
right
practice squad. Now, you know, I should have known this, but I didn't, and it surfaced this week. Matt Filer, unfortunately, is not practice squad eligible, and you know, I thought that he was initially. I forgot that you know, he originally entered the league in 2014, so he's playing for an NFL job right now, a 53-man job, because he can't go to a team's practice squad. You know, you don't keep him for that reason and reason alone. So, and he's unlikely to make it, barring an injury at this point. As for Mihalik, you know, Alex, you know, really has been the, you know, we of course saw Mihalik play in that preseason opener. You know, he had the holding call on him, kind of a questionable holding call, if you ask me, at least from the angle that I saw, which wasn't great, on that called back touchdown pass to Xavier Grimble. In short, I don't, you know, look, I mean, big offensive tackles are hard to find, and obviously the Detroit Lions had some interest in him last year, right? And didn't the Lions already lose?
No, the Lions, they picked him up. So he was on their squad for 3 weeks and went back through, and the Steelers picked him back up.
Yeah, I know that. But what I'm saying is, haven't the Lions already lost a tackle? Didn't they lose Decker or something?
Good question. I didn't see that.
And you know, they're probably looking for. Let's see. He on June 6th. He'll miss at least. Decker had shoulder surgery, will, you know, out in an indefinite amount of time. if there's one team that I would be afraid that would claim Mahalik off of waivers from the Steelers after final cuts, it would probably be Mahalik, and it would be to the Lions because they have familiarity with him, you know? But with that said, has he been all that great, you know, during preseason? I mean, I don't think he's stuck out. I mean, there's three preseason games left to go, though, so it's worth noting that. So of everybody on the roster right now, and I know the fans out there and listeners probably have four or five players right now that they're swearing won't make it through waivers. I think Mahalik might be the guy, if any, that people should need to worry about. And if you don't keep him, or if he doesn't make it through, who would be the practice? Who would be your practice squad tackle at that point? You know, kind of tough to come up with one, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. There's nobody else that obviously I'm not up there as in years past, so I don't have a view on, you know, who's looked good or who's done this, and I'm not talking to people as much. But yeah, that he would be the guy, and I think you're right. When we think about the practice squad guys, and it's 10 guys now, you know, you're going to have two offensive linemen, you're going to have at least one defensive lineman, that's three. You're going to have a receiver or two, a receiver and a running, you're going to have definitely a running back and a receiver, so that's five. You're going to have one or two defensive backs, a linebacker, so, you know, you're immediately at getting to seven or eight right there, and then are you going to have a tight end, or are you going to have, you know, you're probably not going to have a quarterback. But, you know, you quickly get to the numbers because you're going to fill the depth at most of these positions, or you're going to keep one or two guys on based on talent level. And, you know, I think a lot of people look at the practice squad and they think it's you know, these are the most talented guys. Not always, because you are, by definition, as Dave has just pointed out, you're going to have an interior lineman and a tackle. And, yeah, they're going to be the best guys you have. But regardless of whether they're one of your 10 best guys, you're going to fill those positions, and you're going to do that kind of across the board so that if somebody gets hurt in practice on Tuesday or somebody gets hurt in a game on Sunday, you've got guys that you don't have to necessarily scour the waiver wire. It doesn't mean you won't, and you won't find something better on the waiver wire, but you got to go through practice. You got to be able to do the things that you want to do during the course of the week to prepare for the game to set that practice squad up. So, you know, again, I know this is, for a lot of people, this is minutia that we're talking about, but there are so few positions that are actually being battled for on this team. I mean, we could ink 50 today. I'm comfortable with that, saying we could write down 50 today, and then we're just talking about the periphery of which guys. Which, let me ask you, as I talk about Cody Sensabaugh, another guy we haven't talked about at all, free agent signing, who's going to make the team. Keith Butler had some comments. Carnell Lake had some comments about your boy Mike Hilton and being excited to have him. Is it a done deal for Mike Hilton?
I think so. And I have the last four or five special edition podcast after practices, I ask Alex every time, are you ready to call Mike Hilton a lock? And he won't go there yet. I'm already calling Mike Hilton a lock. As you said last week, Carnell Lake, talked glowingly about Hilton, talked about him potentially being a dimeback, compared him to two former Steelers defensive backs that he played with, in Willie Williams and Chris Odom. You fast forward to just yesterday, I think it was Keith Butler talking about, you know, he's a guy that we're excited to have. And when you factor in that Cameron Sutton has missed nearly all of training camp with a hamstring injury, Cinquez Golson, the days are numbered for him at this point. The fact that Hilton, that Sensabaugh really hasn't received any snaps in the slot during training camp or in the preseason, you're gonna need a backup guy there. So I mean, right now, Hilton is your backup slot behind William Gay. So I mean, I find it hard to believe that outside of someone outside of the organization being claimed off waivers to be that backup slot guy, I think Hilton's making this roster as the number six cornerback. So the question then becomes, are you keeping seven, and is that seventh Brian Allen, and has he done enough so far to warrant keeping? And I, you know, Alex says he's progressing and this, that, and the other, but You know, I know a lot of fans are saying, no way Brian Allen makes it through waivers, but I would bet against that and think that you could get Allen to the practice squad. Now, obviously, once the first 5 weeks of the season are over, that's when you start worrying about guys getting plucked away. But a lot can happen to your own 53-man roster during that time as far as injuries go, where you probably, you know, you're going to be calling up people from the practice squad, whether or not you like it or not, at some point. So right now, I consider Hilton the locket as part of six cornerbacks. And now the question becomes, you know, will they keep seven? And is Brian Allen that seventh?
No, they're not keeping. Brian Allen's not making the team. I mean, it's here, Hilton, and you know, we didn't even mention Sanquez Golson. We obviously heard comments about him again. And people are going to mislabel the Sanquez Golson pick as a bust. Now, if you get the crystal ball and can foretell injuries, and the Steelers knew that he was an injury-prone guy, then you can say he's a bust. And if you want to make the argument that they drafted an undersized corner and they should know, so he's a bust, you can make it. I don't think it's a legitimate argument. But, man, it's been massively disappointing. And I've been, you know, kind of in Sanquez Golson's camp and his corner, you know, from day one, because, you know, a guy who has that kind of – I'm a big fan of the level of production you have in college, and obviously he had it, particularly in his senior year with all the interceptions that he had. But what do I know? Because the guy, you know, I watched him get hurt. He didn't practice. He didn't play at all the first year in terms of even practicing. I watched the practice of the play where he got hurt on in the third practice last year. And then he goes down in the, you know, gets through OTAs this year, but he goes down in the first week this year, and he has never dressed for an exhibition game in his third season. So, as much as I'd like him to be in the conversation, he is so far on the outside looking in that he would have to do extraordinary things. He'd have to be back on Tuesday practicing and do extraordinary things during the week and have an extraordinary game and then play the whole game and then, you know, hope to get to the practice squad is, I think, really all we can say about him.
Yeah, and one final note real quick on Sensabaugh. You know, if there's one person I think that would be semi-vulnerable to not, you know, and very semi-vulnerable to not making it as a cornerback, might be Sensabaugh. But with that said, you know, he has experience playing both in the slot and outside, and the only guy that would threaten his spot, assuming Hilton is a lock, would be Brian Allen, because he's bigger, you know, he's a big guy, and you think he has upside, and he's a boundary guy. But you only have, I think, something like $425,000 signing bonus involved with Sensabaugh. Obviously, he would be, if you did cut him, it'd be a post June 1st, so you'd split up, his dead money over this year and next year, which is virtually nothing, $212,000 in each of those years. So that he would be the only guy at this point that I think would be semi-vulnerable. But with that said, and as I mentioned, because he has ability to play in the slot and outside, and is an experienced guy, I find it very, very, very hard to believe the Steelers would cut him in lieu of a guy like Brian Allen. Now, the thing with Golson, I think what fans are the biggest fear right now with fans of the team when it comes to Sanquez Golson is, oh my, he's going to get claimed off waivers is their first worry. And second, that even if he doesn't and goes to a practice squad of another team, is that some other team, the Patriots, would develop him, and, you know, the Steelers would have to watch a former second-round draft pick flourish with another team. Now, with that said, how much time – I mean, you just can't continue to wish and hope that a guy is going to get healthy and finally hit the field for you. And on top of that, 3 years – I mean, three preseasons – and three whole years of not playing in an NFL game, man, that's I mean, that's a lot of time. I'm not saying that he can't potentially come back and do something, but it's kind of unheard of, you know. Now, I know undrafted free agents, hang around, and former undrafted free agents and maybe even some other draft picks hang around and eventually get a break or whatnot. But we're talking about a guy that's been suffered through multiple injuries and then not playing on top of it. It's kind of hard to think that a team would be willing to tie their wagon to him, basically sight unseen, and the fact that, you know, got a little bit of a lemon involved in him as well.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see it. I can't see it how he makes the team. I mean, maybe, yeah, he can make the practice squad, but I can't see how he makes the team.
Are you even considering, let's say Golson got healthy and, you know, played 40 snaps in the preseason finale against the Panthers, had a special teams tackle and two pass breakups or something against other future unemployed players, is he still worth considering keeping on your practice squad? The Steelers, that is?
You drafted him in the second round for a reason. So if you see the things that you drafted him for, yes. But you've got to see that. I mean, I don't – you know what? The first year was shoulder. The second year was a knee. I can't remember. What is it? What's he dinging with this year?
Hamstring.
So, I mean, again, I'm not – I don't walk around and say guys are injury prone when it's not, you know, Gregory Polanco pulling his hamstring three times in 2 months. I mean, nothing seems to be chronic. It's three different injuries. Injuries happen in football. So I'm not going to put that label on him. But the reality is – every time he's gotten on the field, he's been injured. Now, he's played football, you know, his entire life, and he played a lot of football at Ole Miss. He got dinged up a couple times there. So they'll have to – like, the medical staff obviously would have some input in that kind of conversation. But if I saw all the things that made me think that he was, you know, worthy of a second-round pick, and I saw that the things he did on the field confirmed that, which he's never had the opportunity to do, then, yeah, I'd keep him on the practice squad for sure.
Well, here's the thing, though. You know, you're let's assume Brian Allen's ticketed for the practice squad. You're not going to keep two cornerbacks because you're probably, if you keep four safeties, you're going to need a safety on your practice squad as well. So there's two spots on your practice squad tied up by defensive backs out of 10. So if you're keeping Allen, you're probably not keeping Golson on top of him, you know, on the practice squad. Look, I understand the frustration, fans have, but, you know, let Golson become somebody else's project is my thoughts on that at this point.
So, yeah, the only question would be, because he's, you know, 2 years removed from the draft, is a second-round pick from 3 years ago more valuable than your fifth-round pick this year? Look, we've seen how many fifth-round picks corners the Steelers have had do nothing. I mean, you know, we can go through the list, starting with, you know, Holland. I mean, look, we know the names. So it has been a thing. The Steelers have drafted corners in the fifth round, and they've been no good. I mean, you know, Cresdon Butler was a fourth-round guy, and he stuck around for a little while. But they have not had, you know, none of these guys have done anything. The only thing for me with Sanquez Golson is you took him in the second round. And so you thought, you know, second round picks, you know, generally stick around the league for a while. So you thought more of him. You invested a much higher value pick in him. So if he shows something and it's him or Brian Allen, I'm still taking him over Brian Allen. But, you know, maybe they're going to look and just say, we think Brian Allen's upside's higher and we don't want to put up with the, you know, what we've put up with already anymore with Sanquez Golson. So you go that way. But I would still be inclined to think that they think the guy they took in the second round has a higher ceiling and can contribute more than the project they took in the fifth round this year. But, you know, we'll see how it plays out.
I'd take that baby, I'd put it in the bath water, and I'd open the window and I'd throw it out. It sounds cold, but look, it's not the first time they've not had a second round player work out. I mean, look at Kendrell Bell several years ago, a hot start, and then injuries ended up
incredibly hot start.
Alonzo Jackson back in 2003. You want to talk about a guy that didn't perform on the field? What about Ricardo Coakley, Tusculum? Product, that's another one that didn't work out. You could go back to just Lima Swede. How about that?
Lima Swede's that's the bust. I mean, the Alonzo Jackson was a bust. Kendrell Bell certainly was not.
You remember how many people were still trying to hold out hope for Lima Swede, even in the final days?
I'm glad. What year was Swede? 2008. I'm just trying to think if I had a chance to talk on the podcast about Lima Swede, because I might have been one of those guys. That's the thing. I might have been making the Lima Swede. I might have been making the Senquez Golson argument for Lima Swede. But the thing is, we got to see Lima Swede, and we got to see the drops, and we got to see the ridiculousness in the end zone against the ball that – he didn't catch where he's wide open and then lay on the ground for 30 seconds as if he was injured. I mean, you got to see the ridiculousness with Lima Swede. So we haven't seen that with Senquez Golson.
And remember Mike Adams, just 2012, another former second-round draft pick. Now, luckily, outside of guys like Golson, and of course the jury, some would say the jury's still out on Sean Davis, but and of course,
the jury's not out on Sean Davis. Sean Davis has already passed the test.
Juju, of course, this year, Stephon Tuitt absolutely has passed the mustard. Le'Veon Bell, former second-round draft pick, passed the mustard. Marcus Gilbert, a former second round. You want to talk about a steal now? People, and even a couple years into his career, people were very, very down on Marcus Gilbert. And the hollering that went on when he signed that contract that he has right now. Jason Worlds, of course, nobody predicts that somebody's going to be, find God or whatever he found, the way that he did. But even if he had, was he ever going to be a premier player? I mean, he kind of led the Steelers in sacks, I think, that one year almost died by default. And I remember breaking down those sacks, and a lot of them weren't pretty, if there is such a thing. But I guess what I'm getting at is, cut bait with Senquez Golson if he goes on somewhere else and flourishes. Good on him, but I'm tired of wasting time on him. Boy, we just went back in time, all the way back to like 2000. Geez.
Yeah, 2000. We got to 2003 at least, right? Well, Kendrell Bell, was he 2002?
He was 2001. Boy, Kendrell Bell. Boy, that rookie season. Remember? Hey,
Kendrell Bell's a little mystifying, don't you think? I mean, how good he was, and then how quickly he was out of the league. Who would have bet on that?
Didn't they trade for who was it? Mike Johnson. Ahead of that season from the Rams or something, because of the uncertainty, even though they had drafted Bell that year, and Bell just had a tremendous preseason, and Cowher had no choice but to start him, and of course he come out blazing his rookie year, and really, I think even into his third year, he was played in 16 games and was still doing a little something. But that fourth year was when the wheels just completely came off after that, and he couldn't stay healthy anymore. So yeah, I mean, he had first three seasons, I think, of Kendrell Bell's career, 18 total sacks and 180, 200 total tackles. Yeah, there was nothing wrong with that pick. It just, couldn't ward off that injury bug once it got a hold of him.
I'm pretty good at remembering just about where every guy went to college. I'm drawing a blank on where he went to college.
Bell, Georgia.
Georgia. Jeez, I don't think I ever saw him play in college that was a memory for me. I don't have any visions of him in a red jersey and Just none of that sticks for some reason. I got a lot of visions of him with the Steelers, but none of it about his college career.
Yeah. Boy, what if he would have been able to hang on and put together 9 years, 10 years in the NFL, you know? Just you know, one of those things. You know, it's like Lamar Woodley several years ago. You know, he was
I mean, Kendrell Bell had one outstanding year. Lamar Woodley was an outstanding player for a bunch of years.
Yeah, imagine if that injury bug or his own conditioning program or whatever it was, didn't get a hold of him. I mean, he was very deserving of that contract when he got it. It's just not long after that. You know, the wheels came off in that game against New England halfway through it, and then he just was never the same player again. So
yeah, never, not close. So speaking of linebackers, David DeCastro had some nice things to say about Tyler Matakevich. You know, he's getting Shazier's reps and said he looked really good out there. I don't put any credence in anything the Steelers release in terms of depth charts. It's basically worthless. And I pointed out when they released the first one that Matakevich was third at both inside linebacker positions behind L.J. Ford at one spot, behind Stevie Johnson at the other spot. If Vince or Shazier were to go down, is Tyler Matakevich possibly the next guy at both spots if it were, you know, if it were a game day decision? Or do you think the depth chart is actually true that he's behind both those guys? Hard for me to believe that he would be behind Stevie Johnson.
Mike Tomlin, pretty much told us that he's the backup guy yesterday. You know that he's the backup to both the back end and the Mac and the Buck position there. And,
why do they put out these worthless depth charts?
Because the media, I guess, wants them. And
I guess the league mandates it. I think is one thing, but I mean, why not do it? If you're going to put it out, why not put it out and do it the way that it is? I don't get it. I mean, do you think guys on the field don't know what the hell's going on? I mean, are you doing it because, you know, seniority? There was somebody else, I can't even remember who, was way down the list. And I was just like, why are you doing this? Why are you putting Darius Howard-Bey as the backup at one of these positions? It's not going to be that way. I don't get it.
Maybe Vegas wants it. here's what Mike Tomlin was asked yesterday about Matakevich and if he's capable of being able to play both inside spots. I think he's proven that, yes, Tomlin said, which is good. We need him to. Oftentimes, that is the case for the guy in that position, though. Vince Williams was dual position capable when he was in that spot a few years ago. Tyler appears to be the same. Tyler appears to be game to the task. So yeah, I mean he's obviously your primary backup there. Now the question becomes who's number four, and if there's a number five, or are you even keeping number five? And the question between L.J. Fort and Steven Johnson. You know, we'll see what happens there. You can definitely go up and down the roster and keep only four inside linebackers and make a strong argument, or you could go up and down it and keep five inside linebackers and have a good argument as well too.
I think I like both of those guys as special teams players. They're not competing against guys who would necessarily be the Hayward Bays or the Coates or the Golsons or whomever on special teams. They're playing a different type of role. So I think both those guys make it.
Well, you're obviously, if you're number four, is probably your number four inside linebacker is making it because
he can play football.
Because he can play, not only special teams, but also,
yeah, he
can
play on the field.
Play on the
and
field.
And I think that's L.J. Ford.
Like I said, it'd be tough. It would really be tough to argue with you there. Now, kind of speaking, I've got an article going up on Steelers Depot here after we get off this podcast, talking about who are the guys that that Danny Smith's probably watching the closest right now on his short list. Now, these are guys that I do not consider locks to make the roster, even though probably one or two of them, you know, already have 2 feet inside the door. But, you know, the list is obviously short. I think it's led by Mike Hilton. Played fantastic on special teams in the opener, and he might not need Danny Smith banging the table for him anyway. But it never hurts to have Danny Smith in your corner there. So he's number one on my list. Sammy Coates and Darius Hayward-Bay, call him number 2A, 2B, if you will. Those two guys, I think, for obvious reasons, where they are in the wide receiver depth chart, and because both can play special teams, are guys that Danny's watching. Now, Sammy Coates, the fall from grace last year as a wide receiver and all, I'm still taking him as a wide receiver before I would Darius Hayward-Bay. Is that two dogs, one bone? Justin Hunter, three dogs, one bone? Or are there two bones and three dogs? I don't know. We'll see. But I think both those guys really are in the sights of Danny Smith right now. We already talked about Stevie Johnson and L.J. Fort. Both those guys, I think, are on the short list of Danny Smith of potential guys that he might have to bang the table for. Nile Davis, I don't know if you consider Nile a lock right now. A lot of people listening to this podcast probably do.
Rank the three one-year free agent signings for me on their likelihood of making the team, in Hunter, Sensabaugh, and Davis.
Sensabaugh, then Hunter, then Davis.
You think Nile Davis has a less of an odds of making the team than Hunter?
Yeah, but I've never been. I mean, I've got sort of a bias against him, and I'm,
Yeah, I think Nile Davis makes the team. I think he's pretty close. I think Sensabaugh is a lock. I think Nile Davis is 95%, and I've made my case that Justin Hunter's he's not even a coin flip. I think he's less than 50%. So I think he's, to me, he's clearly the one who might not make it.
You know,
I'd be very surprised if the other two guys didn't make it.
If Davis popped off a 50-yard kickoff return Sunday night, I'll be over it. Okay.
Yeah.
I just don't think he's that great of a running back, David. I really don't. And if he can't, I think, Fitzgerald Toussaint is not going to the Pro Bowl either, but the little intangible things outside of kick returns, I would take Toussaint over Davis. Now, like I said, if all Nile Davis has to do is pop one, and I might go out and buy a jersey, okay? because Lord knows we've talked about kickoff returners over the years and how nice it would be, to help the offense that way. So I try to separate, like everybody, I try to separate these guys and judge them by what they have done in a Steelers uniform during preseason and whatnot. Davis did have a nice run the other night against the Giants, but I thought Toussaint did some nice things in that game as well too. And like I said, if I'm gauging these guys as running backs or running backs only, I still have Toussaint ahead of Nile Davis, we'll see. Finishing out my short list here of guys Danny Smith might be watching. Keith Kelsey is a guy that we really haven't talked about, the undrafted rookie free agent linebacker out of Louisville, for obvious reasons. I mean, he's a long, long shot, but let's suppose, you keep five inside linebackers and you're Danny Smith and you're looking for a guy that can play core special teams for you, a younger guy, a guy that can get up and down the field. Kelsey did that in the opener against the Giants. He had two he was credited with two total special teams tackles in that game. Now, I think he's going to have to average two a game moving forward and then hope that Danny Smith can't live without him. But maybe he's a guy that we need to mention just to kind of say, hey, we told you we mentioned this guy. Because, is Keith Kelsey a younger version of Steven Johnson? And if so, is that a bad thing?
Look, you're trying to keep football players that are going to help your team win, and different guys have different roles. And as you say, if you're not going to get on the field as a guy who's going to be a part of the defensive package or sub package, then you better be a good special teams player. But one of the, you always do keep an eye to, look, this is a guy who can develop into something that, you know, maybe he can be a player. I mean, the thing about Tyler Matakevich, and I talked a bit earlier about Sanquez Golson's production at Ole Miss, is, you know, he's a Butkus Award winner. I mean, we see it when he gets on the field in these preseason games. I mean, the guy is a tackling machine. And his downside, and I don't want to make this a race thing, but, you know, you can compare him a little bit to Jerry Olsavsky, is the downside is he's not a, compared to the guys probably, you know, in the stalls next to him in the locker room, he's not as physically as gifted a guy. He's not going to run as fast. He's not as big. He's not as strong. But he's obviously got some intelligence, because he's a productive player. And I think that's one of the things that's – and this is what I do think this is some of the genius of Bill Belichick, is he can find guys and put them in roles so that they succeed at what they're asked to do better than any coach we've ever seen. And you look at a guy like Tyler Matakevich, and you know, I wasn't 100% sure he was going to make the team last year. Obviously, he's going to make the team this year. We haven't even brought his name up in that conversation. And he just – I really do wonder – if, and hopefully, you know, you hope this for every Steeler backup. Hopefully they never see the field if you're rooting for the team, because that means somebody got injured or something happened, you know, an adverse situation that required the guy to play. I really do wonder if Tyler Matakevich at the highest level of the game, a guy who was a Butkus Award winner at a pretty good level of competition that Temple, you know, has reached now at playing college football, if he's a guy who could be a guy that we would consider a good linebacker, you know, a productive linebacker. And I have no idea, because the reason he went in the seventh round is because every team looked and 250 times they passed because he doesn't have those physical gifts. But, you know, it's just like all the guys from Division II, Joe Dudacks of the world, who's the running back for the Chargers and who was with the Patriots and whatever. You know, you look at guys who, you know, they don't have the physical gifts and they go undrafted, they go really late, but they were tremendously productive and they succeed because they're really smart and they're really good at what they do. And they are the really interesting guys. And I don't know that we'll ever see Tyler Matakevich get any kind of extended look as a starter or a guy who gets to play. But it would be a fascinating thing to see. Yeah, Mike Vrabel might be a guy, you know, you put in a similar type of thing, who ended up having a great career with the Patriots.
They say about former NFL wide receiver Chris Carter, all he did was catch touchdowns. All Tyler Matakevich does is make tackles.
No, that's right.
You know, so here's the thing. You know, we've obviously seen Tyler Matakevich over, you know, last preseason quite a bit. We saw him make a huge impact on special teams last year for the Steelers. But in reality, you know, he only played a handful of snaps on defense last year, and you know, they weren't. You know, he had a handful of tackles, but a lot of them came, you know, several yards past the line of scrimmage there. So, look, I mean, he is your guy. He is your number three inside linebacker right now. So, you know, will we see him? You know, hopefully we don't see him play much of any on defense this year. But, boy, Ryan Shazier right now battling through yet another injury, this time a hamstring injury. At this point, I will be shocked if Shazier plays at all during the preseason. And then you get into the regular season again, or are we going to be scratching our head and you know, the people start come back out and saying, oh, I don't know if we, you know, we gave Ryan Shazier that we picked up his fifth year option. Is he going to be worth, you know, is he going to be worth signing long term? Can't, you know, is he a guy that you can count on playing 16 games a season? And hopefully he is that guy this year. Hopefully he gets over this hamstring injury and then that's it, end of story. But He hasn't practiced a lot, David, during training camp. And like I said, I'll be surprised if Ryan Shazier plays at all during the preseason.
Yeah. Okay, so
Mike Mitchell's still dealing with an very early camp injury that we might not see him play at all during the preseason either. So that's a concern of not having at least two of your starters not getting work in, and two communicating guys at that. I mean, can you think of two bigger communicators that you'll need on a defensive side of the football than Ryan Shazier and Mike Mitchell this year?
No, they're huge guys. And, it doesn't – again, Ben and A.B. aren't playing. Le'Veon Bell's not around. It's not that big a deal if they're 100% ready to go, when the bell rings. But it is a big deal if they're not. So – just more of the same of what we've been talking about.
All right, ending out my short list real quick. Jacob, back to Keith Kelsey. Just watch him during the rest of the preseason games. If he doesn't make the 53, he might be a prime candidate to be on the practice squad this year. Jacob Hagan's probably the fifth safety out of right now, and if the team only keeps four, he's on the outside looking in. So obviously, special teams is something to watch for there. Terrell Watson, nightmare, the Azusa Pacific product there. Because of the position that he plays, it's going to be tough for him to make the 53-man roster regardless of what he does on special teams. But, he was running up and down, got some snaps in that game against the Giants. And one other guy, Jake McGee, the newest tight end on the roster. Yeah, he's your money's probably safe if you bet against him making the 53. And although he didn't register any stats in that preseason opener, he did a lot of nice things, not only on offense, but you could visibly see him running downfield on kickoffs, cracking some skulls, even though he didn't get a tackle right down kind of the middle of the field there. So that would be my short list of guys that Danny Smith could potentially be banging the table for. But in reality, it probably stops after, Hilton, Coates, DHB, Steven Johnson, LJ Fort, and Nile Davis. Those are probably the five guys that Danny Smith probably most has his eyes on the most right now.
So the news around the NFL, today's news is Doug Marrone has opened up the starting job for the Jaguars, and which now brings Chad Henne into play with Blake Bortles. Your thoughts on Blake Bortles?
I am disappointed. I thought he would have become a better quarterback than he is now. I said it years ago. I thought he would slowly develop into probably a top half top 15 quarterback or so. And there's no sign that's going to happen with him. Boy, it was just brutal. I went back and watched him playing that game last night, and just absolutely brutal. They've got a mess over there right now. You got three quarterbacks and all three. Look, what do you get? You picked up the fifth-year option on Blake Bortles right now, and imagine if he got injured right now at some point and couldn't pass a physical next year. You have to pay him $19 million or whatever it is. So if he can't win the starting job for you this year, do you cut him outright or do you make him inactive all season?
That's a good question. I think you do what's best for your football team, which is probably – who's the third quarterback there now?
Oh, God, who is it?
I can look it up on our lads, but we go to backup quarterbacks we like, and you know how I feel about Matt Moore and Josh McCown, who's doing very well, maybe the starter with the Jets. I'm fine with Chad Henne. I mean, Chad Henne's not gonna take you to the Super Bowl, but Chad Henne's better than some other guys who start in this league in my mind. So, if he were to have the job, that's an interesting question of whether you would actually consider. Here you are in going into week three of the preseason. Is Blake Bortles now, if he's not going to get starters reps in practice, Would you actually consider cutting him? That's highly unlikely, obviously, or unlikely, obviously, but it's a very interesting question.
Brandon Allen is their number three, or was their number three last night, the former six-round draft pick out of Arkansas, and he had the best game of all three, 10 of 15, 144 yards and a touchdown in that game. So what if you feel comfortable moving forward with Henny and Allen, the rest of the way? At this point, and like I said, I would have never thought it, dreamed it would have come to this, but I think you absolutely might have to consider cutting Bortles. I mean, do you want to really run the risk? I mean, if he's not your starter, he's got that fit, you know. I don't know. I mean, I know you want to put. I would just open up the competition all the way around, and if he can't win the number two spot, then I would cut him.
Well, again, as you say, you know, maybe you just don't make him active. He's your number two quarterback, but you don't make him active. And if Henny were to break his arm, then you turn to him. But otherwise, he's just kind of, in case of emergency, break glass type of guy.
Yeah, I long release and all. I mean, I know he had his warts coming out of college, but I really thought Blake Bortles would be a better quarterback than what he has or what he is right now. The Ravens unsurprisingly signed Jeremy Zutaw back this morning. They are a mess on that offensive line right now, and
they're over under the Ravens 7 wins.
Look, their defense is going to help them. You know, it's going to keep them in games again this year. But that offense, boy, especially Flacco. And look, I know Flacco's supposed to be able to get past this back thing or whatnot. But, you know, what if, you know, of course you could say this about any team, one hit. But, you know, with a back issue kind of already sitting out there, over under 7 wins. I think they hit 7 wins on the money.
Yeah, I don't think they make 500 either. So, I have a couple of things we'll do maybe next week now, since we're hitting up toward an hour. But I wanted, you know, just I was taking a look at a bunch of different things about last year, and I did some interesting. I don't want you to research this week, so I'm not going to tip you off. But I have some interesting questions for you about last year that I want to throw at you. We'll get into, you know, this game. We'll have a better sense of things. Obviously, for those who don't know how the calendar works, the Steelers will make a cut down to 75 after game 3. And then, obviously, things move Labor Day weekend. Things start moving pretty quickly. And, you know, anybody the Steelers cut is going to be picked up by every team. And so anybody they lose will be virtually certain to the Steelers will populate every roster with every guy they cut from 75 down to 53. And we'll have that debate again. That is our annual debate, which is comical.
No 75 to 53 this year, David. It goes.
So I got it all wrong. I just get the calendar all. Is it 90 to 53?
It's 90 to 53 this year. They did away with. Where have you been?
Yeah, why did you stop me halfway through that little diatribe?
Yeah, 90 to 53 this year.
Make it even more interesting because obviously, you know, it just makes life a little bit harder on the personnel guys.
Oh, well, let me ask you this: does it mean a damn thing? You know, I thought Kevin Colbert put it best: the biggest way it hurts teams by doing away with that 75 to 53 is it prevents them from maybe bringing a guy that was cut from 90 to 75 in to kind of look at to see if they want to have on the practice squad a guy like Allen.
Well, he's been awfully disingenuous because he let Ross Cockrell sit out there for a full week and didn't bring him in, and then brought him in on the cut to 53. Cockrell got cut on that 90 to 75 cut, and the Steelers did not take him, did not sign him. And then they did bring him in afterwards. So I don't know if they were laying in the weeds or playing possum or what. It doesn't make any sense to me. But his comment suggests otherwise.
Well, no. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, why bring a guy in immediately after that 90-75 cut when you don't know who might get released from 75-53?
The only reason you bring him in is if you're worried somebody else might bring him in.
I still think, they got Alejandro Villanueva, and he was a 90-75 cut, if I remember. Now they got him and signed him to the practice squad, not to the 53, obviously. But I think his comments still hold water. It gives you a chance to kind of look at some of those guys. Here would be the interesting thing, Colbert obviously referred to they brought Villanueva in to look at him before signing him, to the practice squad. If my memory serves me, and one would think that once Ross Cockrell cleared waivers, that they brought him in to get a look at him before ultimately signing him as well. Or was Cockrell? Hold on a minute. Was Cockrell claimed off waivers?
Cockrell was claimed off waivers. Yes.
Okay. Well, then that was from the.
He cleared waivers. They let him sit out there. He sat out there. Sorry. So for people who wonder what we're talking about, it's are you assuming his rookie, his draft contract, or does he clear waivers and then you sign him to whatever deal you sign him to? So that's the semantics Dave and I are talking about.
Right. They released him on August 31st, 2015, and the Steelers didn't sign him until September 5th. So he had cleared waivers.
Yeah, no, he cleared, and that's what I'm saying. He I think he was cut on the 90-75 cut. In fact, I'm 99.9% sure of that.
Hold on a minute here. Yes, according to this article on the Bills website, it was a difficult decision for the Bills organization to make on Monday, but the process of reducing their roster to the required 75. Ross Cockrell was part of that 90-75 cut in 2015, and then he cleared waivers, and then the Steelers signed him on September 5th that year. So it gave them time to look at him. They probably brought him in and worked him out just like they did with Villanueva. That's my point.
Okay. I don't think they did that, and I'm pretty sure they didn't do that, but that's a fair point.
Okay, and that's where Colbert was going with this is now with the with cutting from 90-53, you've got to immediately set not only your own 53, but you got to set your practice squad on top of it. So it makes
sense. You get to look at your own last 15 guys for an extra week.
Right. Right. But I mean that's not the advantage in my opinion. I mean
what was the point of making the change? What was the argument for making the change?
Maybe injuries. I don't know, David. I mean,
let's get to one other topic before we wrap things up. Damaris Smith, the head of the Players Association, says we're going to have a lockout or a strike after the 2020 season. We haven't played 2017 yet. This is way down the road, but just gut feel, odds that real games are missed 4 years down the road when this labor agreement expires. Are the odds greater than 20% that a real game is missed? I mean, you hear these guys are looking at Kevin Durant and the salaries that the NBA guys are making, and every guy thinks they're worth $50 million, and they see the best players in the NFL are making, the quarterbacks are making 20 and the other guys are making 10 to 15, and they see guys in the NBA making 50 and they're jealous. So are we going to have labor unrest?
I think there will be labor unrest.
We're going to miss games, real games.
I don't think so. I'm the glass half full guy, and I think even though we could see something similar that what happened in 2011, where it wipes out, you know, a good portion of the off season, maybe training camp start late or whatnot. I think if they miss any time, it'll be a game. But I would bet, as we sit here right now, I would bet that there's that there's some sort of lockout or whatnot or you know what have you, but that it ultimately gets solved and resolved, and a new CBA gets signed before the start, you know, before that regular season's scheduled to start. That would be my best guess, looking at my crystal ball, which needs batteries.
All right. Well, Sunday, 4:00, folks, Steelers-Falcons.
All right, real quick, a bold prediction. Give me two bold predictions for this game against the Falcons.
Big game from Eli Rogers.
Always my
bold prediction. And Tyler Matakevich, 10 tackles.
Wow. I will take Martavis Bryant, reception, length over 50 yards. Ah, that's not a bold prediction. Who am I kidding? Let's see here. James Conner has two runs over 15 yards each. And another bold prediction. Let me go defensive side of the ball. Pick six for Mike Hilton. How's that?
All right, I like that. And I just want to throw in, did we talk about Doran Grant having that pick six? Did we mention that at the beginning of last year?
If you and I didn't, me and Alex did recently.
Yeah, I mean, Doran Grant has that pick six, and all of a sudden he's making the team after week one of the preseason, and he was so far off the radar after week three. We'll see if Mike Hilton keeps his name as firmly on the radar as it appears to be right now.
All right, folks, follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show, go to SteelersDepot.com. Find that donate button up right navigational bar. Boy, it's going to be hard for me to write a recap up for this one. Have a good weekend, David.
All right. Hey, everybody, enjoy the game. We'll be back at it Monday. As always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.